pragmatic discourses hang together with the contemporary democratic projects of the West. Projects that Rorty calls, I think quite aptly, postmodern bourgeois liberalism. And I should say, he says it with a smile. He considers himself a good postmodern bourgeois liberal. Rorty doesn't try in this text to ground democracy or give it philosophic foundations or prove that it's right or the best form of government. But rather, he offers a view which shows how things cohere with our democratic practices and offers support short of justification. Now, in fact, there's a good reason why he does this. He makes one of the most refreshing comments in the history of philosophy. He says, look, if we have to get all of society together and tell them, you know, philosophy cannot legitimate democracy, one of them's got to go. Which one's going to go? Right? He says, come on, democracy has priority over philosophy, not the other way around. Philosophy doesn't have to support democracy, just the other way around entirely. If you have a philosophy which is consistent with democracy, you're likely to get adherence. That's the way it really goes. The form of life comes first. Democracy comes first. That's the valuable part of our project. Okay. Rorty in the text argues that post-Hegelian inquiry has shown us contingency, the contingency of our language, right? That it is the way it is, not because of some final fixed metaphysical scheme, but simply because the animals we are made the moves we did at this given time and that given time. Our institutions similarly evolved not on the basis of some great plan, but simply through trial and error, right? We did not put in amendments giving us freedom of speech in this country and freedom of religion because we thought they were absolute goods. We wrote such practices because we couldn't enforce orthodoxy. We tried for about 100 years and it failed. There's too many darn sects in this country. Everybody goes off and forms their own little church. So we made a virtue of necessity. Now we see it for different reasons. It was contingent. Similarly, our beliefs, all of our values, all of our institutions, all of our form of life is contingent. Hegel showed us that. What this has allowed us to do is realize how we might redescribe ourselves and our institutions, right? That we can redescribe what the founding fathers were doing. They thought they were making an accommodation with reality, but we can redescribe it as saying, no, they were really leading to the realization that tolerance is good in and of itself, that it's the best form of life. And now we can come to realize, because of this contingency, that there is no big reality, truth, or goodness, no metaphysical virtue which we must subject ourselves to. We create virtue, goodness, truth. They're all contingent. We needn't feel ourselves to be a function of something outside of ourselves, that there is some metaphysical power which we must be subservient to, which once was God and then became science and now is the criterion of meaning or some such thing. We are, as it were, he's being quite humanist, we're the center. There's nothing outside of us upon which we must subject ourselves. Such redescription, then, attempt to look at things from new perspectives, is achieved through something he calls non-normal discourse, which is clearly an allusion to Kuhn. In fact, he specifically cites Kuhn's. Just as pre-paradigmatic science is non-normal, so redescription is like shifting out of paradigms into looser ways of looking at things. And the best exemplification of this, Rorty believes, is the metaphor. And this comes to the question of how one interprets a metaphor. My love is a rose, right? Now, we've heard that metaphor so many times that we can't help thinking that it must either have to do with the fact that my love is sweet and fragrant, or that my love's rather difficult and thorny, right? But the first time you hear a new metaphor, how you interpret it will be completely